Everybody remembers Tim Coleman back in the 90s. He used to sit in the front row at every groundfish meeting, every council meeting. The reason he sat in the front row, he said, it's very important that you make eye contact with the council members so they can't get away from you. He was very instrumental. I said, the council's lost a friend. I'm not sure he would always say the council was one of his friends. But he wrote a lot of articles. Was very involved in the fisheries for many, many years. He passed doing what he loved doing best just about a month ago. He went fishing, returning to his car. They found him. So I'll be leaving at noontime today, so let everybody know, because tonight's his memorial service. So if we could have a moment of silence, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. I want to begin by thanking Tom and Fiona, who have been extremely busy putting a huge pile of materials together in time for Monday's joint meeting and today's meeting. There are a large number of materials in the binder. I want to highlight the committee summary from 5:30, the Amendment 18 summary, and the Groundfish Scalp Joint Committee meeting, which was put on the table this morning. Since our last meeting in Mystic, the PDT's met, the groundfish advisors have met, the recreational advisors have met, the committee has met, and the joint scallop committees met just recently on Monday. Today we've got three major topics to report on, plus some other business. We're going to start off with Amendment 18. We're going to then transition into the Georges Bank Yellowtail flounder management issues and then move on to the update on the committee activities. I have a large number of motions today, five or six from the joint committee meeting and probably another 10 plus from the groundfish committee. A lot of them are fairly straightforward. And we also have a Bill Grenchers here to give a short report from the GAP, and I'll provide a brief report from the recreational summaries just before the committee update. But we're going to lead off with Fiona's presentation on Amendment 18 scoping. So take it away.
Good morning. As you know, the Council has proposed to draft regulations for Amendment 18 to reduce the likelihood of groundfish permit holders of controlling excessive shares of the resource and over-consolidation within the fleet. They had identified two objectives for the amendment. First one is to consider the establishment of accumulation caps for the groundfish fishery and to consider issues associated with fleet diversity in the multi-species fishery. A control date has been established for April 7th, 2011, and this merely alerted the industry and public that any present or future accumulation of fishing privileges may be limited or may not be allowed after or prior to the control date. A number of potential management measures have been proposed for this amendment. These are listed on the board and in your handouts. The first one is no action. Another is establishing individual accumulation caps or sector accumulation caps, establishing usage caps for vessels fishing on a multi-species permit, and other measures to promote diversity within the fleet, establishing performance indicators relating to the two objectives identified for the amendment, and establishing fleet diversity and accumulation limit measures fleet-wide or separately for inshore and offshore fleets. The Council held 10 public meetings throughout New England. Attendance varied with location, and those numbers on the board are total attendees for the public hearings. And written comments were also received by the Council and the Regional Office. The majority of written and oral comments were in favor of Amendment 18 moving forward. There were 17 people or organizations who submitted both written and oral testimony, of which 12 were in favor and 5 were against. There were 4 individuals who attended multiple hearings, and another 4 individuals also sent in multiple written comments. Looking at the geographic distribution of the comments, there were some comments received from the West Coast, but as expected, the majority were from New England, primarily from Maine and Massachusetts. Maine had the highest number of unfavorable comments towards Amendment 18, with Massachusetts having the most in favor of the amendment. Rhode Island had one comment submitted, and that was against Amendment 18. Some of the comments, however, did not include location info, so if you ever felt like attempting the math, the numbers might not add up, just so you know. And moving on to the comment categories, the majority were concerned about the effect cat shares were having on smaller vessels, primarily with the inshore fishing of larger vessels shifting their effort more inshore. And this is labeled the offshore-inshore on their chart. There was support for quota set-asides and baseline criteria for leasing. A large portion was in favor of permit banks, but the range of suggested recipients varied. Comments opposed to this amendment were concerned with reduced flexibility and profitability of the fishery, and the opposition was not in favor of accumulation caps and requested grandfathering of individuals that may be above the cap. It was felt that it would be better to allow for fleet diversity to be maintained at the sector level instead of being mandated. Now, examining the categories in more detail, fleet diversity did receive a lot of support, but a need for a firm definition for fleet diversity was felt to be necessary, and that firm definition was not elucidated during the scoping meetings. Some comments focused on local impacts with the expectation of coastal ghost towns, job losses, negative impacts on future generations, and fewer options to enjoy fish. There have been a number of recent local programs, such as community supported fisheries and supplying healthy food to local hospitals, that were thought to be in jeopardy. The rate of concentration of revenue has also changed in 2010 following the implementation of cap shares. And one commenter thought a fleet that consisted of only large vessels would limit the council's ability to react to changing assessments. There was a proposal by the Northeast Hook Fishermen's Association that suggested having a specific sub-ACL for hand gear HA permit holders, removing them from the common pool. And this was felt to contribute to maintaining fleet diversity. One commenter considered the current situation to be in violation of National Standard 4, that is supposed to ensure equitable allocation to all fishermen in a way that no particular individual, corporation, or other entity acquires an excessive share of such privileges. Moving on to the inshore-offshore situation, this was the most commented on issue. It was a major concern. The discussion tended to focus on cod stocks. Inshore fishermen were frustrated at having rebuilt the inshore cod stock only to have it seemingly wiped out by the influx of offshore boats. An inshore-offshore boundary was proposed to divide the Gulf of Maine cod into east and west areas, and the localized depletion of Gulf of Maine cod might be contributing to consolidation because the small boats can't catch their quota and lease it to bigger boats. A sanctuary was proposed for inshore boats because the offshore boats are able to return offshore once restrictions are forced to be implemented in inshore areas. Quota set-asides were considered to be a community resource that could be set up by taking a chunk of allocation off the top. There were a number of suggestions for the recipients of this quota. New entrants were the most recommended because of the high cost of permits. Small inshore boats could also benefit from the help. To help them compete with larger entities, ensuring the viability of the inshore fleets. There were stories in the public hearings of fishermen who have built their businesses up over the span of a decade or two, only to lose it with the implementation of cat shares, and they were unable to pass their businesses on to their children, ending family traditions. Quota set-asides could be used to reward sectors that meet benchmarks. One suggestion was to give fishermen quota from a permit bank after a set profit was made. There was one caveat that was raised about permit banks, is that it creates competition by supplying cheap quota to qualifying individuals that may have negative impacts on those not benefiting. portion of the comments expressed the need to prevent 100% leasing because of the fear that it would lead to the consolidation of the entire quota into larger entities that would largely export fish, thus maximizing profit and not sustainable harvesting. Small boats felt that they had invested more in their communities and had more of a stewardship of their fishing grounds. Many felt the formulas used to calculate allocations were flawed and unfair because they were based on history, and some were thought affected by management closures. Some baseline leasing restrictions on Gulf of Maine and Georgia's Bank Cod were suggested to help protect the inshore spawning stocks. There were a number of other suggestions, including retaining a certain percentage of our permits allocation if the home state, within the home state if it was sold, fixing the price of lease allocations, revisiting the split between commercial and recreational fisheries and cod quota allocations, prevent fishing in multiple stock areas of a species in a single trip, and equitable distribution of allocations geographically. Some other suggestions included limiting corporate boats to specific areas and restricting leasing only down, not up. Accumulation caps were thought necessary to disincentivize large operations and allow more sustainable harvest. There is a perception that under the current system, stocks can be controlled by a number of individuals who are able to buy up limited quota. And the example given was Georgia's Bank winter flounder. It was feared that this may happen with Gulf of Maine cod if quotas are reduced. A broad range of caps were suggested, including individual, sector, permit number, and quota control. Some general comments in favor of Amendment 18 were some fishermen thought that it was impossible to make it under catch shares, and this amendment had to move forward. There were severe impacts on crew. Already, according to one commenter, 165 crew jobs had been lost. It was suggested that penalties for multiple violations of exceeded larger trip limits should be enacted, and closed areas should not be opened. Sport fishing should be prohibited in the closed areas. There were comments in opposition to the amendment, and they generally wanted no caps on number of permits, no allocation cap, no ACE set aside, no incentives, no owner requirements, no trade for fish only, no price controls, no 30 days area sign-in, and no division of the fishery. They didn't see the point in further complicating management when the objectives could be achieved at the sector level, as one sector has said to have already done. Amendment 18 was seen to violate the consolidation goals of Amendment 16 while reducing flexibility and profitability. Opening the closed areas can mitigate this loss of profitability, it was suggested. Sectors are not a lap system, and Amendment 18 was viewed as a way to backfill into a lap system. It would reduce flexibility and trap the fleet in an untenable economic position. And it was thought that no one had enough allocation, and this amendment was causing uneasiness with lenders when it came to leasing quota. This was seen as punishing those who worked hard enough to accumulate their quota, and a number requested that if an accumulation cap was set up, that any party holding quota above the cap would be grandfathered in. And there were some concerns that any changes to the new catch share system may negatively affect the system, and it should be allowed to adapt on its own. There were some general comments on, general comments sent in to this amendment, or into the public comment on this amendment. These regarded monitoring costs. As you know, the fleet is supposed to be taking over the cost of at-sea monitors, and there were some comments regarding alternative funding sources. And a couple of comments were made that they did not want what happened to cod to happen in other fisheries, such as monkfish. And if you have any questions, I will try to answer them as best I can.
Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I did have a couple of questions here. There were 10 hearings, is that correct? And I have a total of 82 people in 10 hearings.
Those were the number of comments.
Was there overlap? Was there, were duplicates of people? Was that 82 different people or 82 that include multiple appearances by?
As I said, there were four people who made comments at multiple hearings.
Okay, all right, four people. I didn't. I'm sorry, I missed that. And what I'm seeing here, the distribution indicates that of those 82 people, there were 38 positive comments. 38 pluses. And then on the page where it's titled Fleet Diversity, the first bullet says that this Amendment 18 received a lot of support. And I would question that statement.
The fleet diversity topic received a lot of support.
Just that one topic. Is that because I wasn't clear to me how that the way it's structured yet.
Well, fleet diversity is one of the objectives for the amendment, and that was one of the more supported or more frequent comments.
Okay,
in the submissions.
So when you're looking at distribution of favorable comments and then geographic distribution of yes and no, what does that yes and no refer to?
The yes refers to those in favor of Amendment 18, and the noes are opposed to Amendment 18.
Okay, so we have 38 people in favor of Amendment 18. Of whom?
Of the commenters, yes.
Of the commenters. Okay, well, I would not call that a lot of support, frankly. It looks pretty thin.
Any other questions for Fiona? Comments? Dave Gatham.
Yeah, I had a comment because I'm not sure if the public has seen the written comments, which are pretty hefty. Specifically, three things. One is I would call people's attention to a letter from the state of Massachusetts, which offers some ideas on basic research that needs to be done on perhaps how to proceed. I think that's important. The second one I call people's attention to is the Food and Water Watch letter, specifically a statement on the bottom of page 3, which describes how fishermen in Iceland took their grievance over catch shares to the United Nations Human Rights Committee and won. I think that's a cautionary tale that people should read very carefully. We certainly need more information on that because I don't know anything about it. And obviously it's from somebody that's opposed to catch shares, so I need to know whether the statement is factually accurate, but it is footnoted, and I think that we should do some more research into that as we decide how to proceed with Amendment 18. And the last comment I wanted to make was actually one of just a human interest thing. Dick Allen sent in quite a lengthy document on the history of the fishery, which was actually very interesting reading for those of you who are interested in history. It's a history of the fishery in New England by state. It was nice to read something in a council binder that really didn't try to push me to do this or not do that. It's just a factually interesting thing, and I call people's attention to it in the public. So thank you.
Any further council comments, questions? Fiona.
I just want to clarify this slide. There are two bars here. There's written and oral comments. One, the legend is partly cut off on the screen. So the blue bar here is the written comments submitted, and the green are the oral comments. So the total number of those in favor of amendment is larger than 38. I broke them up separately because they're two different categories.
I had one question. Looking at the two objectives for this amendment under the basically accumulation caps and fleet diversity, And I just couldn't find the scoping document, but how did we get from that to getting comments on the baseline of how the allocations were made? I don't see the connection between that and what the objectives for Amendment 18 are.
Unfortunately, I wasn't there for the public comment session, so all I could include in this report were the written comments that were available.
Tom Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sure Terry can speak to this as well, but having, and I believe Dr. Pierce, but having sort of facilitated a couple of those hearings, I think comments were wide-ranging and touched on a number of issues that, at least as we frame the objective so far, as you suggest, may be tangential. But yeah, the most comments and a number of comments at the hearings that I attended and facilitated were pretty wide-ranging and touched on just about everything to do with groundfish management.
Anyone else on the council? I'll quickly go to the audience. Any questions, comments on where we are with that? But
yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Brett Tolley with the Northwest Atlantic Marine Alliance. I just want to start off by saying thank you to Fiona for the presentation, and I just want to also acknowledge the hard work that Annie Hawkins, a staff member, did on facilitating the scoping hearings and putting together, I think, the bulk of a lot of this work as well. I also just want to recognize that in terms of the comments, both oral and written, there is a huge amount of support, a ratio of almost 6-1 in favor of moving Amendment 18 forward. And I guess I just want to, you know, try to understand what the next steps are, what the council plans to do now that this report is out. I also want to acknowledge the challenges that we face. I understand that the PDT, that the council staff has a huge full plate, right, with monitoring costs, with Atlantic sturgeon, with low catch limits, et cetera. And I just want to, you know, encourage the council to continue doing this and the rest of the issues that need to be addressed that are urgent. So I understand that there is a timeline. Mr. Paul Howard at the last council meeting, I think, had included a timeline for Amendment 18 in the larger timeline scheme. And I think it was between now and September that the council is tasked to identify areas in Amendment 18 to further do analysis, to increase the white paper, and to bring those back so that the council can look at that analysis back in September. So to the chairman, I don't know if we can understand what the next steps are, if that is still the current timeline, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Anyway, Ron?
Ron Smolowitz, Fishery Survival Fund. One question regarding the groundfish closed area considerations. Is that completely in the Habitat Omnibus Amendment, or is it going to be in Amendment 18 as well?
I would say that it was just under the omnibus.
So in the omnibus amendment, if that ever gets through, there doesn't need to be parallel amendments in the other plans. It just it'll cover it. It doesn't need to be built into the others. Thank you.
Jackie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jackie Hodel, the Executive Director of the Northeast Seafood Coalition. I have more of a question and perhaps more of a statement. The Northeast Seafood Coalition has a very large and diverse membership, and when we submit public comments to a proposed rule such as this, we go through a very lengthy process, perhaps not necessarily with the board, with the membership, every single member of the Northeast Seafood Coalition, but we definitely go through a process through our board to come up with organizational positions. Our organization, in our comments, we specify how many vessel active vessels in 2011. We had 254 entities with active 254 entities with 514 groundfish permits that we were representing, and we have a board what we feel is inclusive of our membership. And when we review, when we see summaries such as this, and we're weighted as one, I just would wonder how the council considers that to be one vote. So I think that's similar to other organizations that are commenting. They go through very lengthy processes to with their boards to develop comments. I mean, we worked on these comments for 4 or 5 months as an organization. So to see that we feel that we're weighted as one vote when it comes to a summary document, I think is troublesome. And, you know, I don't want to have to go through, as executive director of the coalition, I don't want to have to go through the process of going to every single one of my members to get them to sign off on our comments, or have every single one of them also submit a comment to have us be recognized as a larger organization. I think that that's just not a proper process. So it's in the weighting of the summary of this presentation and this analysis that I wanted to mention. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Gary, then Maggie, then I'm coming back to the council.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name's Gary Libby, ground fisherman from Port Clyde. Overall, I'm in favor of a diverse fleet. I think we need small and large boats out there working to support the same goal, and that's to rebuild fish stocks, improve market, and everybody can make a living. As far as accumulation caps go, I know a lot of us have been doing this all our lives. I happen to be one of them. We've accumulated a certain amount of catch through catch shares. I don't know if it would be fair or equitable to start taking some of that and redistributing it just out of the blue. I think you have to have some sort of mechanism to do that if you're going to do that. If we could produce more fish and there was more to go around to help some new entrants, I think the permit banks and leasing of the fish may be the only answer to get new entrants in and increase the diversity of the fleet. But it's going to be a tough thing to do, and I'm sure if you start pulling accumulated catch away, you're going to hear a lot of screaming. So thanks for the opportunity to speak.
Maggie, back to the council. Any further questions? Terry, from the standpoint of where we go from here, could you just give the council a thumbnail of what is going to happen?
Yeah, thank you, Rip. We're about to go into a prolonged discussion on two huge issues, yellowtail flounder and the sector monitoring and ACL framework this afternoon. On top of that, as has been mentioned, we have sturgeon, and not last is Gulf of Maine cod. So, in response to Brett's question, I mean, it's certainly my sense that the timeline is going to be delayed for continued work on Amendment 18. It's still on our, it's still a council priority, but we have other priorities that are going to preempt it. And as we get into the fall and we work our way through, you know, these other other imminent crises, I suspect at our fall priority session we'll see where it falls at that time.
Thank you. Anything else on this? Doug?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Terry, for your honest assessment of where we're going, of the speed at which we'll be going at this, and it does seem like we have been hit with a tidal wave of crises in ground fish right now that have put something as important as, at least what I believe is a very important amendment, something we should have done even before we did Amendment 16 on the back burner. And, you know, I'm hoping through the diligent work of the council and the committee over the next few months we can try and address some of these crises, and then in the next council year start moving forward with Amendment 18, because I do think there are segments of the groundfish fishery that need this desperately, and they may not even be around by the time we get to it. So thank you.
Terry, I'd like to move on to Georgia Bank Yellowtail.
Yeah, I just want to summarize by thanking Fiona and for coming into the team so quickly and doing a great job, and to also echo Tom Dempsey's comments that his summary of the hearings that he attended were identical to the comments that I received. But before Tom tees off on his PowerPoint, because the groundfish advisors met and their discussion overlapped much of both the upcoming agenda items, I'm going to turn it over to Bill Grencher, the chairman of the advisors, for a brief overview.
Bill Grencher. I'm going to keep this quick. Most of this is in your materials, but we had a meeting, as he said, on May 22nd, and we went over paying for sector monitoring, at-sea monitoring. We recommended options for doing that. We talked about full retention of groundfish and asked the committee to clarify the purpose of electronic monitoring to keep its focus narrow, so increase the likelihood of it being successful. Talked about minimum fish sizes, the urgency of resolving the carryover from 2012 to 2013, specifically for cod. Talked about possession limits for halibut and catfish. Talked about, then we spent several different motions, discussions on yellowtails, and wrapped it up with one on mixed trawl fisheries. And so I won't go into any more detail because that's all in your materials. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Yeah, I'd just like to say thank you, Bill, for all the work the advisors did and for making your time to come today.
So this morning, I'm going to give an overview of the process used to set U.S.-Canada quotas for 2012 and the work of the Georges Bank Yellowtail Flounder Working Group and the committee recommendations. This is going to be a little bit of a combination of a lot of things that I said on Monday. I've tried to streamline a little, but there are a few council members who haven't heard this presentation and some members of the public, so it'll get everybody on the same footing. We set quotas for Georges Bank Yellowtail as part of the U.S.-Canada Resource Sharing Understanding. We cooperate with Canada on this. The management strategy of the understanding is to maintain a low to neutral risk of exceeding the fishing mortality reference. When stock conditions are poor, mortality rates should be further reduced to promote rebuilding. We don't have specific criteria in the understanding as to what poor stock conditions mean or what the rebuilding target is. We used to be somewhat hamstrung by U.S. law, but the International Fishery Agreement Clarification Act considerably liberalized the application of rebuilding requirements to this stock. We still have to set quotas below the overfishing level. We still must have a defined rebuilding plan, but generally speaking, we're not bound by the 10-year period. The Transboundary Management Guidance Committee, or TMGC, is a group that recommends quotas. The quota recommendation in the case of the U.S. comes to the council, which reviews it, and if the council approves it, we forward it to the Fisheries Service for approval and implementation. Each country's share of the quota is currently defined by an established formula that nowadays is weighed heavily by resource distribution based on three scallop surveys. So where we wound up in 2012 is that based on the track report last year, we were faced with a number of factors that indicated Georgia's yellowtail was in poor shape. We had declining weights at age, something that has been noticed by the industry and reported by the industry, but is also picked up in the assessment. We have a severely truncated age structure. We were experiencing poor recruitment, including the lowest recruitment on record for the 2009 year class. Stock rebuilding was not going very well, though there had been some increases since about 2005. We had consistently exceeded the reference point up through 2009, and we had a retrospective pattern which was starting to increase, which was making us concerned that the FREP, the fishing mortality in 2010, which we thought was low, actually wasn't low. So based on all these factors, the U.S. members of the TMGC recommended a quote catch of 900 metric tons at the TMGC, and the Canadians agreed. One thing, in fact, that doesn't do is get the SSC out of the process of setting an ABC for Georgia's Bank yellowtail flounder. So after the TMGC meeting, the SSC met, and they recommended an ABC of 1,150 metric tons. I want to make it clear that they didn't view this as a rejection of the TMGC advice. They specifically commented that they felt their recommendation was consistent with the TMGC advice. However, in light of this number, the council came forward and rejected the TMGC recommendation, sent the U.S. members back to try and renegotiate a new value, and they did. They met with the TMGC and set a quota of 1,150 metric tons. With the U.S. share at 49%, that means the U.S. gets 564 metric tons. This is about 39% of the 2011 quota. You have to remember, however, that the 2011 quota was set without any consideration of rebuilding requirements because of the passage of the International Fishery Agreement Clarification Act. So once we get an overall quota, we divvy it up to different components of the fishery, and the two main components are the sub-ACLs for groundfish and the sub-ACLs for the scallop fishery. The scallop fishery was given a sub-ACL for Georgia's Bank yellowtail flounder in Amendment 16. We did not specify a specific percentage. We took the approach that because of the area-based management system in the scallop plan, it was better to tailor the amount to where the scallopers are expected to fish for the next couple of years. Just as an example, and a good one on Georgia's Bank, is generally in the years that closed area 2 access areas are open, we expect the scallopers to catch more yellowtail flounder, and so they would need more. If you assign a fixed percentage, one year it might be too much, one year it might be too little. So the first time we specified these was in the fall of 2009 during the development of Framework 44. We based the allocation on an estimate of how much yellowtail the scallop fishery is expected to catch if they harvest their yield. I'll go into that in a little more detail a little later in the presentation on how we do that. For 2011 and 2012, the council chose to allocate 90% of the amount expected to be caught, believing that this would be an incentive to scallopers to reduce their catch. Of course, as we get more data, we can update the estimates, and we updated the estimates twice, but the council chose not to change them. The effect of the updated estimates is that, in reality, in 2011 anyway, the scallopers were allocated more than 90% of what they were expected to catch. So that 2011 allocations are shown on the board, a repetition of the previous slide, just looking at the 1 year, and comparing it to 2011 catch. When the overall quota was reduced last year in Framework 47 as a result of the TMGC recommendation, we didn't change the allocation to the scallopers. I think in part that was because of some changes we made to the scallop fishery ACL and AM process in Framework 47. You have to be a little careful looking at 2011 and saying, geez, they didn't catch much. Why are we giving them so much in 2012? because, as I pointed out, the fishing activity changes from year to year, and this year on Closed Area 2, there is more access trips planned. In addition, with the emergency action that closed the Delmarva access area, there's even more activity going to George's Bank than there were in 2011. The presentation talks about a number of key management components. These are probably very familiar to the folks at the Joint Committee meeting, Groundfish and Scallop Committee. Generally speaking, almost all our groundfish activity is now within sectors, and under current rules, there are really only limited opportunities for people to fish in the George's Bank Yellowtail Flounder stock area once the sector catches all of its George's Bank Yellowtail Flounder ace. In the scallop fishery, if they exceed their sub-ACL, it reduces access to the area in the following year, and I'll put up a slide that shows that, what I mean by that, in a second. And, of course, exceeding the U.S. quota results in an immediate payback in the next year, which comes off the U.S. quota, which would immediately reduce the amount available to sector vessels. Now, I mentioned we made some changes to the scallop fishery ACLs and AMs. A big one is there's no longer a cap on how much yellowtail flounder can be caught within an access area. This was viewed as creating a derby fishery and removing this cap. The cap was also adopted before we had an overall sub-ACL. And so with an overall sub-ACL, you can make an argument that you don't need the cap anymore and it will benefit the scallop fishery and reduce derby effects. The other change we made is that if the scallop fishery is not expected to catch their entire sub-ACL, by January 15th, NIMS can re-estimate the expected catch and modify the sub-ACLs, in essence, increasing the groundfish sub-ACL and reducing the scallop sub-ACL. And the third change is that we changed when the scallop AM is triggered. It's only triggered if the scallop sub-ACL is exceeded and the overall ACL is exceeded, or the scallop catch is 150% or more of their sub-ACL. This was sort of the trade-off between the two fisheries. By allowing some catch to move back and forth, the scallop fishery got their AMs modified a little bit. Now, their AMs, we're only talking about the area out on George's Bank, out in here, but that yellow area is the AM area. It basically is closed if the sub-ACL is exceeded, and it's closed according to a schedule to based on the amount of the overage. In years when the access area is not open, there is less impact of a closure of that yellow square. In years when the access area is open, there is a much larger impact, potential impact, on yellowtail flounder catches. Now, at the April Council meeting, the Council asked NIMS to create a working group for George's Bank yellowtail flounder to expedite transfer of yellowtail from the scallop fishery to the groundfish fishery and also to consider modification of the U.S.-Canada sharing agreement. The working group met May 23rd and held a number of conference calls, and they developed a paper that was emailed to you and has been distributed to the Joint Committee, and we have copies here, that came up with a number of ideas for dealing with this issue and trying to help address it. I'm not going to go through these in any real detail unless people ask questions, but they're broken down in the presentation according to some categories, and the numbers here in the presentation refer to how they're itemized in the paper. So basically, they can be broken down in a category called quota or ACL transfer. And this ranges from actually trying to get increased amounts of fish from the Canadians, for example, to just transferring parts of the scallop ACL to the groundfish fishery. There's some ideas with measures to extend the season. Some of these would adopt trip limits or other effort controls over the sector plan to extend the groundfish fishery. There's actually a lot of those. Moving on to the second page, these are sort of gear modification ideas which would potentially extend the season. Some of these, however, are slightly different and would be changes in scallop fishing activity or scallop gear. Then there's a category that, very descriptively, is we called other, which brings in a grab bag of things that aren't easily categorized, such as figuring out a way to broadcast areas where yellowtail is being caught so fishermen know how to avoid them, either in the scallop fishery or the groundfish fishery. There is a program like that that is in place right now for the access areas in the scallop fishery. And there were some other issues that have been brought up by the working group, some questions about reporting accuracy, TMGC membership, whether we should try and have some sort of informal TMGC meeting, and some questions about the upcoming assessment. So this is the information that was brought through the working group, and then we held a joint committee meeting on Monday. And unfortunately, this slide doesn't quite fit on the screen. But one of the things we went over at the committee meeting is worth spending a little bit of time on, and there's a lot of questions about, well, how do you come up with these estimates of what the scallopers are going to catch for yellowtail flounder? And can we get a revised estimate of what we think the scallopers are going to catch in fishing year 2012? So these slides try to address those two issues. It's really relatively straightforward. Our first step is we try and use an observed, we try and come up with a predicted discard to kept ratio of yellowtail flounder to kept of scallops. And we use an observed discard to kept ratio from some recent period, and we modify it. And it's modified by the change in yellowtail biomass and the change in scallop biomass. So the basic idea here is that if yellowtail biomass goes up, your discard rate is likely to go up. If scallop biomass goes up, your discard rate would go down. So the ratio of those changes gets multiplied by the discard to kept ratio, in essence. And then we take that discard to kept ratio and we expand it to a yellowtail bycatch by estimating the scallop landings. This is something that the scallop PDT routinely does as part of their area management program. Now, in the past when we did this, we would provide a single point estimate. And this time, when the scallop PDT and Devorah Hart did most of this work, all of this work, I should say, they decided, let's try and examine this and create a range of estimates to try and capture some of the uncertainty, because obviously all of these things are subject to variance or subject to uncertainty, and they could modify the estimates. So the big sources of uncertainty are these four. Perhaps a very large one is the yellowtail projection can be inaccurate. Generally speaking, our projections have tended to biomass to be biased high. They overestimate future biomass, which would then bias high your discard estimate. So what we did here is we not only looked at three different projections that were run at the track, but we looked at the distribution of biomass estimates, the high, low, and median for those estimates. So we get a range of the change in biomass. And we did something similar with scallops because that projected biomass can be inaccurate as well. So we used basically a high, medium, and low estimate of scallop biomass. So that gives you a range around these ratios. There is a pretty good relationship between the discard to kept ratio and the ratio between scallop biomass, which is why we adjust discard to kept this way. But it's not perfect. So there are some errors potentially in that relationship. And the other big part of this is that the forecast of scallop landings may be inaccurate, primarily in the open areas. With scallop PDT has a difficult time predicting exactly what's going to come out of the open areas. So we evaluated three different levels of catch. So in essence, the low level was half of the 2011 open area catch in Georgia's, the median was the 2011 catch, and the high is double the 2011 catch in Georgia's Bank. So what this does is it winds up giving you three estimates that we've labeled low, median, and high. And there's a little bit of discussion about what we mean by these. And I guess we're a little hesitant to pin actual probabilities on each of these because it's not certain that our estimates are actually unbiased. If they were, we could pin clear probabilities on these things. But we're pretty confident in saying, for example, that at the high level, there's far less likelihood that the scallop fishery will exceed that amount of yellowtail flounder catch than there is at the median level or there is at the low level. And at the low level, I think we'd be safe to say that there's a pretty good chance that if you were to set their yellowtail quota at the low level, there's a pretty good chance that they would probably exceed it over the course of the year. Now, one of the questions that came up at the committee meeting is, you know, quite honestly, great. This is all based on information you had last year. What happens if you take into account information you have this year? And the short answer is we don't have a lot of information available this year. The longer answer is that the scallop fishing year does start in March, and one of the issues raised was a concern by the scallop industry that there's been a lot more open area fishing activity during the first 3 months of this year than there was last year, and the potential that perhaps scallop bite that might influence yellowtail flounder bycatch. So one of the things we did do that we did not have at the committee meeting is the regional office gave us some estimates of days at sea use on George's Bank in the open areas. And basically the blue bars are fishing year 2011, the red bars are fishing year 2012. And you can see that through March, April, and May, 2012 fishing activity on George's was far higher than fishing year 2011 activity. And to be explicit, that's open area fishing activity. However, once you get to June, and you start to compare June open area activity last year, and these are cumulative, they get a little bit closer. There's still way more in fishing year 2012, but, you know, as opposed to being 10 or 15 times as much, it's probably 1.5 or maybe twice as much activity. Now, the access area on George is open June 15th, so we suspect that a lot of the fishing effort will now move into the access area rather than continue to be in the open area. But still, the effort on George's through June in open areas has been higher than it was in 2011. So with this information, some of this information they didn't have, but at this point, the Joint Committee developed, I think, four motions that Terry will bring up. They recently, this is not the exact language of the motions. The first is to adjust the scallop sub-ACL to reduce it immediately, which would transfer some of it over to the groundfish fishery. But it also modifies how the scallop AM would be triggered, and it would only be triggered if the original sub-ACL, the 307 metric tons, were to be exceeded. This is sometimes, and you may hear this today, referred to as the indemnity clause for the scallop fishery. So that's where that language comes from. This is an emergency action request. It would take the service, at least the AM part of it, would take an emergency action in order to be implemented, in all probability. And there are, quite honestly, some implementation issues that may come up today during the discussion. Another point was to try and get away from the problem of sectors not being able to fish on George's if the sub-ACL is caught, is to define an area where groundfish fishing can occur if their George's Bank yellowtail ace is caught or a high percentage of it is caught. It's a little unclear from the committee motion whether this was intended to be an emergency action request. This is something that might be able to be done through modification of sector ops plans, for example. So there'll probably be some talk about that this afternoon. There was a suggestion to open the closed area to special access programs on May 1st. Currently, they open on August 1st. As a way to provide some other opportunities for groundfish fishermen. And there is a motion to expedite development of the Habitats Omnibus Amendment and its review of groundfish fishing mortality closures. So this is where we were as of the end of Monday. As always, there's always a but. And so here's the but. Most of you have received a email which circulates a draft copy of the George's Bank Flounder working paper for the assessment this year, and that assessment meeting is next week. That working paper, I want to emphasize, is a draft. It hasn't been discussed at all, hasn't been debated, so we don't know whether those are the final results that will come out. But with all those caveats, the assessment gives, I think, significant cause for concern. It illustrates that we now have not just 1 year of bad recruitment, but we have 2 years of poor recruitment, the 2009 and 2010 year classes, though the estimate of the 2009 year class is higher than it was originally. But these 2 year classes are still the lowest in the time series since 1973, I think. It illustrates high fishing mortality rates. By high, they are above FMSY or F reference. More troubling, perhaps, from one standpoint, is it shows that there is a very large retrospective pattern in the assessment. It has increased since last year, which makes this year's results even more troubling because biomass could be lower than we think and the fishing mortality could be higher than we think. The initial draft working paper, and once again, this is not a reviewed recommendation by anybody at the track. It's basically the product of the analyst who works on it, but you know, the 2000, 13 catch could be less than 500 metric tons total for the U.S. and Canada. And it also appears likely that the U.S. share for 2013 will also decline. So we may not get 49% of 500. We could get somewhere in the order of 37 to 40% of 500 under the current sharing agreement. All of this is very preliminary. It will all be talked about at the TRAC assessment meeting next week. But given that the paper has been circulated, we felt it important to get it out on the table because the council won't meet again until next September.
Terry, if I might jump in at this point, it's probably a good segue to ask Sam to make a few comments concerning the Yellowtail Working Group.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As Tom mentioned, at the last council meeting, the council asked the Fisheries Service to join with the council in a working group to help explore the options for dealing with the low yellowtail quota. We were pleased to do that. I think that we looked back on our experience with the cod working group favorably and tried to mimic that in terms of the process and procedure and relationships. The structure of the working group involved, as it had to, the council and Fisheries Service staff. We tried to be very open and included folks that the council thought were appropriate, and we did have a public meeting, which was extremely helpful in New Bedford. While we were at the New Bedford meeting, and we heard from the different sectors of the industry, from the scallopers and the groundfish fishermen, not only their concerns, but what appeared to be a basis for a potential resolution of this issue, which would involve the transfer of some of the scallop allocation to the groundfish fishery for 1 year if the scallopers could get enough assurances that they wouldn't risk closure in the following year. I think the working group took that as one of its tasks, and I'll talk a little bit about that more in a minute. In general, we developed out of that the list of potential actions that Tom presented. I would classify those as short, medium, and long-term actions. The short action being looking at this transfer issue with indemnity, in which I'll discuss in just a second. The more medium approach involved trying to look to Canada to see whether there is any flexibility there. And on that issue, we have started those discussions with Canada. It is an international agreement that we operate under. We cannot guarantee any particular results or that anything might be done. I think to the maximum extent that anything could be done, what we would be looking at is once they get finished fishing for the year, which is in December, if they have anything left over, they might make that available. That mechanism does not currently exist. We've achieved no commitment from them that such that it would occur, but we have started those discussions. In the long term, there's a number of actions. Tom listed those, and I think the council will deal with those. In my view, it is appropriate for the council to deal with this, particularly if this issue is going to recur or worsen, which it might. I think there is a need to look at those long-term actions for 2013, to consider them seriously, to figure out how this fishery will operate. But in the short term, I think one of the things we want to focus on, which arose out of the working group discussions, is this idea of a transfer with indemnity, for lack of a better term. My belief there which I said at the end of the New Bedford meeting, is I think that there is a resolution which could be acceptable to both the groundfish industry and the scallop industry as long as we work together to address the joint concerns. There is risk on both sides. I think the in the way that you look at that. One of the requests was to provide the updated projections, which Tom did, although they have some caveats, and look at how that might be done. And I think there's a motion that's going to come out that will reflect some of the work on that issue, and so I'm very I look forward to that, and I do want to encourage that. I think to be successful, it has to protect the scallopers enough and provide enough to the groundfish fishermen to make it worthwhile. I think those are two joint goals, and I think it's achievable. Tom mentioned that there is a mixture of activities that we could take. The RA has the ability immediately to transfer some of that scallop quota to the groundfish fishery without rulemaking. If you want to impose the indemnity or any of the other associated measures, that will require some form of rulemaking, which will take longer. So there is, I think, one of the things the council needs to consider and has considered, I think, through this motion is the timing issue as to what that mechanism would be. It wouldn't take too long, because we have been prepared and working for such a thing, but it would take longer. So there is an option for an immediate RA action versus a less immediate but still fairly rapid, in the grand scheme of things, emergency rule. We cannot, obviously, if the council goes down an emergency rule path, we will be prepared to accept that, but we have our longstanding policies on emergency rules and how we deal with those, so we would likely vote against, but don't take that as an indication that we're not supportive of this effort, which we've been very involved in. I think that that is the extent of the substance. I do want to take this opportunity, because I'm not sure I'm going to get it again, to thank Rip for co-chairing the working group with me, and to thank the council members, the NIMP staff, and the invited members of the public that either participated in any of the calls or in the New Bedford working group or here. It has been very helpful, and I do appreciate the spirit of the community to look at this as a holistic problem and realize this is a problem the whole region has to face and look for a true collaborative regional solution. So thank you, and I'll turn it back over now.
Thank you, Sam. Terry, I assume you do have some motions, and I was going to open it for questions, but I think if we get into the motions, we will probably be able to direct the questions to those, and it'll cover most of that.
Sounds like a plan. But first, I want to echo your thanks to Sam and the whole staff for providing the assistance and help to get us this far. Really appreciate it. And Tom compressed a full afternoon into a 20-minute presentation, and we do actually have five motions that address the committee spending a fair amount of time considering the advice and recommendations from the working group. So the first committee motion is a rather long one, and it addresses, as what Sam referred to, as a short-term issue, and that's to I'll read it into the record. It's to recommend that the council request National Marine Fisheries Service utilize existing authority provided in Groundfish Framework 47 to immediately transfer all but 156.9 metric ton, which is 90% of the maximum 174.3 metric ton, of Georges Bank yellowtail flounder from the scallop sub-ACL to the groundfish sub-ACL, based on the revised high projection of the 2002 Georges Bank yellowtail flounder bycatch by the scallop fleet. Any additional unused Georges Bank yellowtail flounder should be transferred to the groundfish fleet by January 15th, as outlined in the existing regulations and based on actual scallop fleet catch data from fishing year 2012. This is coupled with a request for an emergency action to temporarily relieve the scallop fishery from any AM triggered by bycatch less than 307 metric ton of yellowtail flounder catch by the scallop fishery that under the current scallop regulations would be required if the sub-ACL is exceeded in 2012. Instead, the pound-for-pound repayment provisions of the U.S.-Canada agreement could be utilized should the TAC be exceeded for fishing year 2012. This passed the committee 8-3-2.
It's a committee motion, doesn't require a second, and it almost violated the Dr. Pierce rule.
Well, he helped. Yes. Actually, it's a combination of two separate motions.
Discussion. I'll go to the audience. Any comments on this? I see Gibb.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gibb Brogan with Oceano. We oppose this motion. This doesn't bring accountability to this fishery. It seems to create 150 metric tons of fish, it seems to be, by the amount that's being transferred above and beyond a fully allocated ACL. It just doesn't seem that there's the required accountability in these fisheries. The trigger points for invoking accountability measures seem to be very cloudy on this, and without clear trigger points that are driven by the assessment that at this point the accountability will kick in for the groundfish fishery and at this point they'll kick in for the scallop fishery and have those at the very end total up to the ACL, we can't support this. It seems that we're creating fish out of thin air here, and it's unsupportable and is not accountable. So we oppose this and hope that the agency will find some other way to come at this one, but this isn't the way. Thanks.
Maggie?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maggie Raymond, Associated Fisheries of Maine. First, I want to say that the comments... the current situation from the groundfish fishermen's perspective is untenable and has to change. We need to get more fish transferred over to the groundfish fleet as soon as possible. So I don't want any comments that I make following that statement to undermine that in any way. I do think there are two separate issues here in this motion, though. They were originally two separate motions and then combined into one. And with respect to the second part of the motion, I think the council needs to take into careful consideration the preliminary information about the status of Georges Bank Yellowtail and what the ACL will be for next year. It looks like some kind of miracle happens, the total U.S. share will be about 200 tons. It's all over then. If we have an overage of any kind of 1 pound this year, that situation could be even worse. So I really would hope that the council would debate these two issues separately and vote on them separately. And again, think about the implications of what an overage will do to everyone next year. In passing this motion, the committee must have some understanding that I don't have, some assurance that the scallop fleet is not going to exceed the ACL. I hope you're right. If this motion passes, I really hope you're right. But I don't see where there is anything to constrain the catch by the scallop fleet. So, again, thank you for, and I do, you know, I thank you. I do thank the council and the service for working on this issue. We obviously brought it up at the April council meeting, and there was a rapid response, and I do appreciate that. Thank you.
Rich Knaster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rich Knaster, Base, New England. It really hurts me to come up here to speak about yellowtail and the mess that the science has got us into. And this all stems down to the survey. It amazes me that we're using SMAS in the closed area for the scallopers to tell them what's the hot spots. Shouldn't the whole area be cold spots? No one believes in the science. No one believes in the trawl survey. Fishermen are trying to avoid yellowtail. If the science matched what fishermen are seeing out in the ocean, there would not be a problem, but obviously it doesn't. There's boats in New Bedford that have 3,000 pounds of yellowtail to fish for the year. If the purpose of doing this is to get rid of the fleet, why don't we just do it really quickly? Put them out of their misery. Think about it. It's common sense. Yellowtail flounder, the number one species in New Bedford for many a years. And we're fighting about scraps. People are talking about going to zero possession. We went zero possession with channel flounders. We haven't caught a pound in 3 years. I think the best thing that could happen is that we do go over and you shut down the industry. No scallopers fishing in Georges, no draggers fishing in Georges because of yellowtail, because of that survey. Although there's 5,000 metric ton in the retrospective pattern, that just goes poof, see you later. There's a lot more to be discussed on yellowtail, and especially going into next year with this possible 200 metric ton between both fleets, which I cannot believe is happening. Another thing is that with sectors, you know, I was here on Monday and we can't get what the observer coverage is for 5 months. We changed our system to what the council wanted, sector management. Not all were in favor for it. I wasn't. But I can tell you after every week, I can tell you how much yellowtail are caught from every vessel in the sector, how much more we get to fish. But with the service, we need 5 months to get the data back. We change on the industry side. Management, science, and you people on the council, you haven't changed. My grandfather came into this country in the 1900s. You know what he came with? 2 arms and 10 fingers. He worked hard. He worked for that American dream. My father worked hard. He bettered my grandfather. Myself, I bettered my father. My brothers bettered my father. I'm having a hard time to see my 8- and 10-year-old trying to better me. It's all because of this. Not just with fisheries, it's throughout the whole government. We forget what we're here for. People are sitting in here that are working for government. Don't you realize that small business pays your fees? And that if there's no small businesses, you have no job. It's simple economics. And to base all this frustration that we've been through the whole week, the workshops on yellowtail, the workshops on Gulf of Maine cod, Gulf of Maine flounder are up 60%. Georgia Bank flounder up 30%. We still can't fish for channel flounder. Must be something happening in the channel that we don't understand. We need a better survey. And it's not a survey where we're going to ratchet down the Bigelow to meet the albatross. The albatross has proven it couldn't catch anything anyway. Side-by-side surveys, well, you're just going to ratchet the fishing boats, our fishing vessels, down back to the albatross again. Something has to change. It really does. And as far as the motion, I'm for it. We do have an accountability measure, which is the U.S.-Canada sharing agreement. That's in place now. how you work out the other accountability measure with the scarlet flea with the closed areas, I don't think it should be there because we have an accountability measure already. That's something to be looking into the future. But again, my stress is that we change for you. We change for the council. We change for Science Center and NIMS and the country, and we're going to save the fish. You haven't changed for us. And my feeling is next year, and I'll just make it public, shut down the industry. Shut it down. No scallops out of Georgia. No fishing in Georgia's whatsoever because of yellowtail. It's insane. Thank you.
Drew.
Thank you. Drew Minkiewicz, Fishery Survival Fund. We actually come here in support of this motion. We think it's, you know, like most compromises, it's not perfect, but it makes the best of a bad situation. The fact is, the scallop season for 2012 started on March 1st. The vast majority of open area days at sea have already been taken by the fleet. Vessels are in the Georges Bank access areas as we speak right now. And they all went out operating under an allocation that was given to them at the beginning of the year, 307 metric tons, with no intent of actually catching that much, but knowing that that's the number that we had to worry about. By drastically reallocating in the middle of the year, this is a very, well, not maybe not unprecedented step, but it's a very drastic step that requires the special action of keeping us to our original sub ACL out of a fairness issue, but then, you know, recognizing that we're not projected to use that much, we don't want to use that much, giving that extra fish over to the ground fish fishery so that they have more certainty in their fishing year going forward, which we support. And, you know, instead of relying to the by January 15th date that was already in the process, we're really just speeding up a process that we already had put in place. And because, you know, we don't, well, you know, Tom presented some new information today about how much effort is going on at Georges Bank. We still don't really have a good idea of how much we've harvested, and we want to make sure we don't oversubscribe this fishery because, unlike previous comments, we're not creating new fish here. The fact is, every fish is going to be counted, and every fish is going to be accounted for. And if too much is, you know, totals over harvested, you know, over the overall tack that the United States has under the agreement, then it's going to come down. And that's no one's desire to go over that. You know, we're trying to figure out, we have this limited pie. How do we best allocate it to allow both fisheries to go forward and prosecute to the full extent that they can? That's the goal here. It's not, you know, my fish versus your fish. It's like, how can we get both fisheries to maximize the harvest of other species out of Georges Bank? Because, you know, no one's making a living off of 500 metric tons of yellowtail. You know, it's really become the quote-unquote choke species. It's just something we have to deal with as the way the law is written. We're trying to rebuild it and doing the best we can by staying under the tax and avoid it as much as possible. And that's our goal. And also, for the record, you know, scallopers are taking active measures to avoid yellowtail. They are putting their money where their mouth is. We are funding out of our own pockets bycatch avoidance program through SMAST. And this isn't theoretical. This isn't something we're saying, well, we'd like to do it. No, they're doing it. They're doing it as we speak. There are boats out there right now as we speak fishing in Georges Bank access areas that are reporting back their catch. It is being tabulated by the university, and they are sending out alerts of places to avoid. So the suggestion that, you know, the scalpers don't have any limits on them and they're not interested in interested in reducing their bycatch are absolutely false. Those statements run contrary to the actual actions that are occurring right now. And so, you know, we strongly support, you know, keeping this motion together. It's a package deal. It's a, you know, the best compromise that we can move forward on at this time. And, you know, this is the solution for now. We have some thoughts on things moving forward that we'll discuss a little later, you know, when the other motions come up, because obviously the news of the new potential tack is for next year is troubling, to say the least. But given that, you know, we're well into this fishing year and we're transferring an extraordinary amount of this allocation over to, you know, give certainty or some certainty to the ground fishing vessels, the keeping the original ACL or AM trigger is absolutely justified in this occasion. Thank you.
Vito G.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Vito Gigliloni, Northeast Seafood Coalition. First of all, we support the motion, we admire the work of the joint committee. I think you came up with a good solution between the two concerns, and we support that. And I just want to make sure, Sam, you've been bringing this all together this way. I think that this is problem solving, and that's where we're at. This is definitely a problematic situation, but there was a thought process by the coalition to go in support this type of approach. We're not willy-nilly looking at a blank check on what the scallopers have. They have the bycatch avoidance system in place. There's projections that have been done that have, you know, the basis for this this proposal right now that's on the table. And, you know, we also understand that industry unity is desirable if we're going to try to use emergency action to truly get us all out of an emergency. So for those things, we support it. And also the justification of acknowledging that the scallop fleet did start their season with a 307 metric ton ACL, and they're acknowledging that it's highly unlikely that they would use that, and the projections show that. But at the same time, the AMs are pretty stringent, and so we thought that, you know, this is not an uneducated guess here. I think that we're in the safe zone at 90% of the high projection. But I also think that in order to move this along quickly, the scallop fleet needs to have the assurance that they're not going to be triggering an AM automatically simply by moving this fish over, because the final projections haven't been out. So for those reasons, we continue to support this motion, and we think that the committee came up with a very good result.
Peter Shelley.
Peter Shelley, Conservation Law Foundation. We oppose this motion, and the way I'd like to approach it is really not looking directly at what the law requires about accountability, which I think is certainly an issue here, as Oceana's pointed out, but the purpose of accountability here, and I think Maggie Raymond got at that a little bit. This is a quota that was set based on this council sending back an earlier recommendation of a lower number and asking for more fish for the total ACL. And, you know, that was already risky. The information that Tom presented indicated the reality of yellowtail flounder, 2 years of poor recruitment, high Fs, a large retrospective pattern. We have two groups of scientists. This isn't just the U.S. scientific community corroborating this concern. This is the Canadian science community. This isn't just about the Bigelow or the albatross. This is a fish that's in potentially much more serious trouble than the current proposed total ACLs reflect. So I think accountability here is absolutely essential. Second, I think there is no question that the yellowtail flounder allocation between the scallop fleet and the groundfish fleet needs to be readjusted on an emergency basis. The groundfish fleet has no margins whatsoever around these issues, and for all the concerns that have been expressed about the scallop fleet, my sense is that they've got pretty substantial margins around their activities. They're a very smart fleet. They're well advised by both science and by technologists who I think will be able to stay within whatever limit this council sets. And so I would certainly urge moving as much of the Yellowtail that isn't likely to be needed by the Scowled fleet over to the Groundfish fleet. And the service retains emergency powers to, and this is going to be a messed up year or two. And in terms of getting these two fisheries working as well as they can be under these circumstances, you still have emergency powers, and you can adjust the quota again if we start to find out something about the scallop landings that would be surprising. And then the final reason for accountability, I think it's really critical here, is hopefully you are going to be able to go back to Canada and successfully persuade them that U.S. fishermen need more of the yellowtail that the scientists are saying are going to be available. And I think part of your argument to the Canadians has to be that both U.S. fleets, the scallopers and the ground fishermen, are operating under very tight, very strict accountability measures, and that there will not be an overrun of this quota. And I think if you are able to do that, which you wouldn't be able to under this motion, your chances of persuading the Canadians that there might be a justification for a short-term transfer would be increased. So we oppose this motion and hope you vote against it. Thank you.
Peter Hughes.
Good afternoon.
Just about.
I'd like to thank the Chairman of the New England Fisheries Management Council for allowing me to make these brief statements. My name is Peter Hughes. I'm with Atlantic Cape Fisheries out of Cape May, New Jersey. We own a number of scallop vessels that fish anywhere from Delmarva on up to the northern edge, enclosed area too. I am also a scallop advisor, a groundfish and scallop advisor, though we haven't met lately. And I was asked to be a participant in the working group, in the groundfish scallop working group. I would like to thank Dan and Sam and others who brought that working group together, because I think it provided a great deal of transparency in problem solving for both sectors of a fishery that are reliant on yellowtail flounder. We are all fishermen. Although we work different aspects of the species that we concentrate on, we are all fishermen and need to work together in problem solving. And I just want to say thank you very much for providing us with this opportunity. It was a great forum, and I think it needs to continue. I think we need to continue to communicate with our brethren over in Groundfish, and I think that they need to continue to communicate with us who are in the scallop fleet. And I think that both sides of each of those very important fisheries need representation, need better representation on the in the U.S.-Canadian negotiations. Some of what was said here today is that, you know, we're looking at a possible choke species. Well, we're obviously looking at a choke species this year of some 500 metric tons. Next year we could be looking at as low as possibly 200 metric tons. We're looking at a choke species of 200 metric tons of yellowtail flounder, which have the ability to basically shut down or redirect a $2 billion fishery, which is the scallop fishery. You know, so now we're not allowed to fish George's Banks. Scallop fleet can't fish in George's Banks. Now they're redirected to the Mid-Atlantic. Well, you know what? Next year we just go over the Mid-Atlantic ACL for yellowtail flounder, and we just compound the problem. And then what? In 2014, the entire fleet is fishing in the channel. We're kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul, in a sense. I just want to say that I support this motion. There are those in the scallop fleet that would not support this motion, and they don't really support losing any of the 307 metric tons that was currently allocated. I must also advise you that quite a number of the Scout fleet is currently fishing in closed area 2. That opened that opening was June 15th, and you know, I know that I have a number of boats up there, and I don't think that I'm significantly different than what takes place on a fleet basis. So with that, I would like to say that I do support the motion, and I would like to say thank you for providing the transparency and bringing both groups together, although we are singularly fishermen. Thank you.
Vito J.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Vito J. Calamo, and I'm the staff person in fisheries for United States Senator Scott Brown in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. First, I want to say thank you, Sam, for holding the meetings. They were done well. I think we got a lot out of it. And here you sit today, as I said this morning. Sam, I think there's more here than yellowtail flounder. I think that at stake here today is bridging a gap that we need to have if we're going to build not only for today but for tomorrow as well. It was very difficult for me today to try to figure out what I was going to do at this point in time, but it is not difficult now. United States Senator Scott Brown, from Massachusetts, of course, encourages us to continue fishing, encourages us to continue our jobs. You know, I can say for the best benefit of the United States of America, but right now it's the best benefit of the East Coast. Mr. Chairman, we support the motion. And like the other speakers, I see again a big benefit is working together. And you heard me preach that yesterday, and the day before, and the day before, and the day before. But to hear two mighty segments of the fisheries from Gloucester, Massachusetts, and New Bedford, two major ports still in the fisheries, where vessels from Maine and New Hampshire enter the fisheries of Massachusetts waters and unload into Massachusetts ports, is very important, Sam and Mr. Chairman, that you pull a little rabbit out of the hat at this time, if you can, with Canada. But to stop the bleeding, our brothers in New Bedford have reached out to the other fishing people, the ground fishing people, to continue fishing. As I said, we must have a today in order to have a tomorrow. If we don't do something, we're not going to be here. And this is for real, Sam. I report back to Boston soon, and all eyes are on what's happening here on my segment. Of course, the Senator has many things, but his big thing is, again, is jobs, economy. I mean, you can hear him say that every day, and he sees the many jobs up and down the coast here, especially in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. I want to go back with a positive statement, a positive report. And right now, my positive is report that all of Massachusetts is working together to help solve major problems. And I'd like to report back that you, Sam, are working together with that. And I do say that to your face here now, and I will say it to my boss. And I thank you for that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jackie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When this motion was made and the vote was taken during the committee meeting on Monday, there was some discussion, or we were led to believe that there would be an updated information prepared or data prepared or presented in front of the council today for where the catch actually is of Georges Bank Yellowtail and the scallop fleet, and I was wondering if staff did, and I'm sorry if that was presented and maybe I had missed something, but is that catch information available, and is that going to be discussed today?
Well, Tom will probably clarify, but he showed what the usage has been for days for the first few months of the scallop season, days in the open area. I don't know if you had actual catch numbers, Tom.
No, we don't.
Okay, thanks. Okay, thank you. The second comment I wanted to make was just in regards to...
Dan has enough...
Oh, good. Okay, sorry, Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the question. This estimate is our best shot at it. It applies the fishing year 2011 observer data to the 2012 kept. So we're taking last year's discard observations to define the rate and then applying it to this year's reported kept catch. And rather than go through the calculation, I'll just give you the bottom line. For the Georges Bank Limited Access and LAGC Yellowtail catch, we're estimating about 42,170 pounds to date as of... This was run on June 13th.
Okay. Thank you. That's good to know. The second, just a comment I wanted to make, is that there's been a lot of discussion about the working papers that have come out prior to the track discussion next week. And I just really want to caution people that those are working papers. And I know that there's concern about what's going on with Georges Bank Yellowtail for next year, but we're really looking to resolve issues for this fishing year. So I think, you know, there's still a lot of process that's going to go into next week, the deliberations between the track and the TMGC is going to meet, and then the council will have a full discussion of what the outlook looks like in September. But we're still hoping to resolve the crisis that we have today and in this current fishing year. So I just want to caution people to put, you know, there, you definitely have to be mindful of what the preliminary discussions are taking place, but I don't want that to influence what we need to do today. Thank you.
Ron.
Ron Smolowitz, Fishery Survival Fund. I support the motion, but I have some pretty big concerns. I think there's something going on out there very significant, and I'm very worried about the out years. And, you know, people have commented about the impacts of fishery and going over the bycatch limits. I think what's going on out there is independent of the fishery, and we might be in for some real hard times. And we need to figure out how to address allowing two fisheries to continue when we have a very, very low biomass, potentially, of yellowtail on Georges Bank. Some industry people believe that it's the survey that's at fault. I would say in May of 2011, the survey stations missed some key concentrations, in my view, but that's a one-year thing. And while the survey initially was designed to detect trends and not to predict absolute abundance, I think it's doing a reasonable job. Where I've cross-checked numbers, I think that's not the problem. So you have to ask yourself, what is the problem? We have a fishery that doesn't have large fish. We have fishery that has the fish that we're seeing are underweight. we have a fishery that's not replacing itself. Its spawning is down. There's something wrong with the fish. We've been doing some analyses out there. It's very preliminary, but it, you know, a frightening hypothesis would be something similar to MSX and shellfish. You know, as a shellfish farmer, I have to get my shellfish to market as two-year-olds because they're not going to survive to be three-year-olds. Think about that probability. Even though right now we don't have much information to say whether that's a valid hypothesis or not, but think about a situation where we don't have yellowtail out there for either of the two fleets. Now, the scallop fleet, I'm pretty sure we could reduce our bycatch compared to what our historic levels are, but it might not be sufficient. And the ground fishery, if they have to depend on having some sort of yellowtail catch available to them to proceed to catch other species, they're going to be in trouble. So while this is a good temporary fix to get us through this year, we need to be concentrating on how to deal with the next few years. And I brought a number of items to the table on Monday, but I didn't see any real significant progress. And if we don't start really attacking this situation, things are going to be hell over the next couple of years. Thank you.
Any more comments from the public? Okay, I'll bring it back to the council. David Pierce.
Well, I think the audience has said it all. Most of the points I was going to make have been made by a number of people in the audience. We're deep into the fishing year. Fishermen have their business plans in place. Their fishing behavior, where they intend to fish, has already been plotted out. They plotted that out for themselves. The scallopers and the ground fishermen have worked together as best they could to come up with a strategy that both would agree is workable, doable, respectful of each side's position. The ground fishermen need yellowtail, clearly. Scallopers have their needs as well, and they're willing to cut back on the amount that's allocated to them, but they're concerned about the accountability measure because, again, they started off working with around 307 metric tons. So regarding accountability, I would say that, frankly, the sea scallop fishery has already shown great accountability. Instead of our saying, you must be accountable, they have said, we will be accountable, and they're doing that through the bycatch avoidance program that continues to expand. It still has great potential to go far beyond what it is right now with the scallop fishery taking a major role and having it work and funding it to their credit. So it's about compromise. It's about unified position. It's about the industry continuing to show on its own behalf the fact that it is holding itself accountable. I think it's the best of all possible worlds. It is certainly not perfect. So I would support the motion. It's really the only way to go. And the Joint Committee, Scallop Committee, and Ground Fish Committee did good work on this after a great deal of input from the service and support from the service. So I encourage the council to vote for it.
Sally.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move to split this motion. And the split would take place where it starts with to request an emergency action. And if I get a second, then I'll just offer a brief justification. There we go.
Is there a second to the motion to split? Frank Blount.
If I could, Mr. Chairman, just in brief, I mean, these are two very different questions that were lumped together. One is about the need to move fish between the two fisheries, which I believe there's a lot of agreement on. The second part is about accountability measures and who's accountable, and ultimately putting the full burden of accountability for this year on the ground fish fishery. So those two very different questions, I think, need to be addressed separately. Thank you.
Okay, discussion on the motion to split. Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And before I comment on this, I just want to, for the record, note that I will be recusing myself on this as I view this as being a final action of the council relative to scallops. I do not support the motion to split. I think the comments we just heard from the public were based on the fact that these two items are together. We spent a long time, a lot of hours on the telephone at meetings. Really do, you know, commend the agency for their hard work on the working group, and it is about bringing people together. And to the industry and those that we've heard from today, and from my perspective, these things absolutely go together. And you split them, and we lose that support. And so for those reasons, I definitely do not support splitting this motion.
Rodney.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't support the motion, just for the comments that Mary Beth said. We got this group, a working group together. They came up with this, and now we're going to tear it all apart and vote on it separately. So I will not be voting in favor of this.
Anyone in favor of, in support? Tom?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do actually support this motion. I believe these are fundamentally different concepts, and the first, which is the first half of the combined motion, I absolutely believe is clear and was the intent of the council, and the council through Framework 47 has really already established that authority, as I think Sam pointed out earlier, that the council's intent and the discussion all the way through was that we would base a projection of scallop needs of Georges Bank Yellowtail Flounder on the best information that we had, most recent information that we had, and that the balance would be allocated to the groundfish fishery. There have been some hiccups. Some things got lost in the shuffle and revisions weren't revised, but now we do have more recent information. And no, it's not perfect, but we don't have perfect information on any estimates that we set. I don't think this estimate, this projected estimate of scallop catch at Georges Bank Yellowtail is different in any way, really. So I think the first half of this motion, which is the transfer itself, I can completely support for all the reasons that people in the audience suggested. The second half, which is what folks have called indemnity, I think is somewhat misnamed. I don't think there is such a thing as indemnity. I think what that is a transfer of accountability and a transfer of responsibility for an overage. And, you know, if you tear away everything else, I think what it fundamentally amounts to is simply a wager. It's a wager that the scallop fleet on Georges Bank will catch substantially less yellowtail than they were projected under the 307 without any communication from this council that they'd be held accountable for that. So I know there are a lot of people who believe that will happen, but it's not, I think, a wager that we can make. I think the impact and consequences to the groundfish fleet of an overage are too great. I hope the scallopers do catch substantially less. Maybe they will. But I don't think it's appropriate to move forward with the second half of this motion and give what's termed indemnity. I think each fleet needs to be responsible for what they're catching. I think the council's role in this process is to establish the appropriate cap based on what we've decided and move forward from there. So I support the motion to split, and a combined motion I can't support because while I believe in the transfer, I don't believe in the second half.
Frank Baum.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support the split. I mean, it's no secret to anybody that I don't support, for the most part, managing by emergency actions. I've made that very clear over the years, and it's hearing the service say they'll vote against it, but they support the concept. Gives me a little bit of a dilemma on this one. But I definitely would go with the first half of this. I voted against it in committee. And everybody should keep in mind, just because we're asking for an emergency, well, if this passes with the emergency action in it, that doesn't mean the service has to do that. Once the emergency action goes through, the service can do whatever they want. They can take advice from the council, but whether they relieve that, that's totally up to them. So keep that in mind as you vote on this.
Terry Stockwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I understand the intent of the motion to split, but I'm opposed to it. The committee had a long, deliberate debate on couple these two motions together as part of the compromise that was crafted to bring to us a proposal today. Without the second component of the motion, I don't believe we would have had the first part to bring to you today. We might have had a very different program proposal. So I think you're kicking the working group and the joint committee in the teeth, and I'm going to vote against it.
Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I actually at one point thought about putting in a motion to split and realized in retrospect that that was absolutely the wrong thing to do. And I agree with Frank that emergency actions are not the proper way to manage, but we're not managing the proper way right now. We have emergencies, and these emergencies need to be dealt with. But to me, the determining factor in this, in holding these two together, is that they are a package and that we are now into the year, and we have no idea what each individual scalper would vote if he knew that this was being done. So I see this as being a situation where there is no right answer, but there's some answers that are better than others. And I just see an unfairness to the people that are currently on the water fishing. They may not even be aware, probably aren't even aware that this deal was struck, and may not support it. So I think that fairness issue has to be taken into account as well. So on balance, it's as Terry pointed out, it's a package deal, and what the agency does with it is beyond our control. That's a decision they have to make and justify however they do that. But that's not ours to do. Ours is to look at the our job is to look at the situation as it exists and put together something that will work from our point of view. And I don't see how we can go any further or go any less than doing that. And I see this as being not what I would like to see, but as the only option to move forward. Thank you.
Mary Beth.
I think I'll pass. I'll just be repetitive.
Sally.
I won't be repetitive. So both of these measures are going to be voted on. On Monday, as a whole, there were only three people who voted against it. This whole package is going to pass. What we're going to get by splitting this is a stronger message on part one. The council can send a very strong message on part one because likely the individuals who voted against at committee on Monday are going to vote for part one here. They're probably going to vote against, I would assume, on part two. And that's only three votes. So we're going to be able to send a stronger message on this if we vote on these things separately. I mean, I think they're both going to pass, quite honestly. I mean, I'm still going to vote yes for part one and no for part two. But I think both are going to pass. So I think we're going to send a stronger message if we do them separately.
Dave Gaetel.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I oppose the motion to split. We spent 5 odd hours on Monday, hammering out this agreement. The number one thing that people in the United States today have identified as a problem with government today is an inability to compromise. And this is a compromise, as a number of speakers from the public said. I think that, I think it's a good compromise. It's the best we can do in a bad situation. For the people that came up to the microphone from the public and said they didn't support it, I'm sorry about that. There's a lot of things in life that I don't support either. But I think that getting some of the pie is better than getting none of the pie at all, and solving the problem is the overall key to good government. So for that reason, I oppose the split. I think the two things are interrelated, and they have to go together. And I also request a roll call vote.
I'm giving the last word to Sam Rout.
I just wanted to join and say that from the fisheries source perspective, it is clear to me that these measures are a result of compromise. A lot of people have worked hard on this, and I think I agree, having been involved in this, that if they had been split out or without Part 2, you may never have gotten Part 1, and you can't deal with them separately. Each side of the industry is giving up something. Each side of the industry is taking some risk. I think they have to be dealt with as a package, and I would oppose this motion.
Okay, I'm going to call the question. We've been asked for a roll call vote. Paul?
Please read the motion and answer yes, no, or abstain. Mark Alexander.
No.
Rodney Avila.
No.
Frank Blount.
Yes.
Tom Dempsey.
Yes.
Mark Gibson.
No.
David Gaethel.
No.
Doug Grout.
No.
Peter Kendall.
No.
Dan Morris.
No.
Glenn Libby.
No.
Sally McGee.
Yes.
Jim Odlin.
No.
David Pierce.
No.
Dave Preble.
No.
Laura Ramsden. Laura. Oh, sorry. Terry Stockwell.
No.
And Mary Beth Tooley.
Recuse.
Recuse. Motion fails.
Okay, we're back on the unsplit motion. Further comments. Rodney. Okay, we had a request for a roll call vote. Any more comments? I call the question. Paul.
Okay, please read the motion and answer yes, no, or abstain. Mary Beth Tooley.
Recuse.
Terry Stockwell.
Yes.
Laura Ramsden, absent. Dave Preble.
Yes.
David Pierce.
Yes.
Jim Odlin.
Yes.
Sally McGee.
No.
Glenn Libby.
Yes.
Dan Morris.
No.
Peter Kendall.
Yes.
Doug Grout.
Yes.
Dave Gaethel.
Yes.
Mark Gibson.
Yes.
Tom Dempsey.
No.
Frank Blount.
No.
Rodney Avila.
Yes.
And Mark Alexander.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay. You got something on this one, Sally? Or I'm thinking that we're at a point where we're probably in a good place to break for lunch. I know it's tough to get things done quickly here, but I'm going to ask a little over an hour to see if we can reconvene at 1:30. Thank you.
I think you can leave.
Leave my coat there, please.
Good.
I got to hurry up.
I thought you were going to see. I don't normally watch out.